Hey guys, you are listening to the Fans of Wrestling Show here on the FOW Radio Network. I am Patrick with Danny Danger, Mika Villas, the trio back together again for another week. And well, summer's almost over. School is back in session. And SummerSlam just happened. The second biggest show of the year for WWE in Brooklyn, New York. A huge weekend in addition to TakeOver, Brooklyn 4, and of course Raw and SmackDown. But yeah, we're not going to be reviewing the whole SummerSlam show since I've done that already. That's on the network. Check it out. But I definitely want to get your thoughts on three specific things, and then you can give me your other thoughts on anything else that you caught your attention on the show. But first off, Roman Reigns defeats Brock Lesnar in 6 minutes, 10 seconds to finally win the Universal Championship. What did you guys think about that? I mean, he failed at WrestleMania. He failed at the greatest Royal Rumble. And here was his next shot. And he finally did it.
As we've seen in the past with Brock Lesnar, although he can be exceptionally dominant, he himself can also fall victim to being overwhelmed and quickly defeated. I mean, we can go back to this was the story of his UFC career. If we even want to go back to that, okay? He would win victories quickly and he would lose them very quickly. His two back-to-back devastating losses were by stoppage, you know, like Brock Lesnar, no, he can dominate, but if you catch him off guard, if you come in as the aggressor and the bully, he's not the best fighter when he's backpedaling, when he's fighting from underneath. And similarly, we saw the same story here. Roman and he, you know, had several back and forth matches. Roman not able to get the win. Brock always able to find a way to come on top. This time, you know, Roman came in with a different strategy. Took control, led control, and essentially dominated and won the match. So Roman wins. The Beast has been vanquished, you know, possibly for who knows how long. We don't know if he's going to, you know, take another UFC fight. Like, some of these things are kind of still too early to be decided, to be known. But, you know, Roman takes the spot. And Roman, you know, the big dog is his yard, et cetera, et cetera. And then he goes on to, you know, apparently, so here we have the Shield coming in strong. You know, I mean, there are three men and they now hold the two top titles, you know, on the brand, you know, holds the IC belt and Brock holds the Universal belt. You know, Dean, any given time now, looking stronger than he's been in quite some time, forces to be reckoned with. Lesnar's UFC career, when he would come in strong and dominate, you were able to catch him, you know, and be the aggressor very early in that fight. He was a terrible counter fighter. He was tearing from underneath. Once he got rocked with a good hit, with a good shot, he didn't know how to take a punch. You know, like, he didn't know how to take and absorb and come back and fight through. And so Roman did the parallel story to Brock Lesnar's UFC career, and it worked out. And you know, and it didn't get crapped on as much as you would think. It seemed that the majority of people were either kind of or they were excited for the Roman victory. I think even some of Roman's detractors at this point were just happy to have the championship be on television regularly. So I think that although they may not have turned a lot of the Roman naysayers into Roman fans, they were fans of that win and what it means for the Universal Championship going forward.
I'm going to pick that up at the end there. I think the people were excited, especially at the end of that match, because of Braun Strowman. I mean, nobody gave a crap about Roman and Brock. If Brock had retained and went off to do UFC duties, so be it. Really, the WWE universe and fans were used to not seeing that big title on television on Raw. So it was one of those things where, like, okay, let's just get this over with. If he's going to give Roman a title, give Roman a title. If Brock's going to keep it, let him keep it. Let them go. Let them separate. Let them part ways. The insertion of Strowman where he was like, hey, I'm coming for it and I'm letting you know I'm coming for it, you know, tonight, I think that gave an extra added amount of energy and excitement where people actually paid attention to the end of that match, where they were literally watching and looking and on the edge of their seats because there was going to be a cash-in, that you were literally waiting for that cash-in to happen. And a cash-in by Strowman was a virtual guarantee of a Strowman Universal Champion. So the way they magnificently gave us, and I say they, the way Vince played us all like Elias's guitar, where we were wound so tight and you had Strowman there and that briefcase flew up and Strowman got knocked down. We were all like, oh. And again, it was one of those roller coaster rides where, again, it started off like, you know what, this is not going to be anything. I don't care. We got thrown for a huge loop with that potential cash in where we were invested in seeing what was going to happen. Who was going to win, because somebody had to catch some hands, be it Brock, be it Roman. We wanted to see one of them catch hands the night of SummerSlam. We got denied, but it added to the energy in the building and at home. I had people over. We all kind of got quiet and watched what was happening because of that. Otherwise, it was just a standard match between these two guys, nothing out of the ordinary. Something we expected to see, something we've seen time and time again, but you know, hey, sometimes we get the matches and the things that we don't want and we wind up wanting them more. So now we have what we want now. We want to see Strowman. We want to see what's going to happen next. And that's, I think, was the beauty of that match and the way it all unfolded and Roman potentially being the winner.
So the Roman Empire is in full effect and the Shield is not reunited once again. I mean, let's not forget they were here last year, but for story purposes, we're going to act like they haven't been together in a long time to make it sound more exciting. Because as soon as Raw ended, 3 new Shield shirts were available on WWEshop.com.
They're the on-again, off-again friends. They're like, they're always the Shield. Like, you know, even when they're apart, basically. It's just, that's what happens when all three are on the same brand, you know? It's just about to happen. And yes, coincidentally, moments after they put their fists together, new shirts magically appeared on WWEshop.com.
Renee's like an elf. She sews all the Shield shirts. So she was, you know, doing her duty as a good wife, making sure that everybody had their merch. The Shield is a, let's call them what they are. They're modern day Degeneration X, where they're this strong unit. No matter individually, they're great or good, but when you put them together, you get super excited to see them. You want to see what they're going to do next. You want to see who they're going to take on. They came into the WWE as this assassination hit squad where they would just take out people who they deemed unjust or what have you. So it's interesting now that you have Roman as the Universal Champion, Seth as the, what is it, the Intercontinental? I don't know. It's so many belts. And Dean's got to pick up a belt, or maybe he just picks up a table and beats somebody with it. He doesn't need a title.
Hey, he's got Renee Young. That's a great prize right there, all right?
Well, he can't wear her around his waist to the ring. I mean, he probably could, but it'd be a little difficult.
But if somebody pins him in the ring, I don't think Renee's just going to leave him. Like, I don't think one loss is, and Renee's going to leave him. Like, so Renee's going to be with him through thick and thin, which is better than the Universal Championship. Universal Championship is a hoe. Okay, it jumps from the waist of this person to the waist of this person to the waist of this person. When you're down, when you need it the most, the Universal Championship is not there for you. It leaves you and goes with somebody else.
The only wrestler who treated belts and wives equally was Ric Flair.
Every single belt was younger and newer and flashier and closer to his kid's age, you know, with each and every one.
Oh, I almost died over here laughing. Yeah, so back to the Shield. They brought them out, I believe, to kind of help
sell the three new shirts.
But not just to sell shirts, but Braun Strowman, with being the monster in the bank, the money in the bank holder, it was almost a foregone conclusion that Braun would beat either Brock or Roman for that title. That nobody to date has been able to stop individually Braun Strowman. How do you protect Roman and make him look strong and keep the title on him? One-on-one, Braun wins. But if you reform the Shield, who everyone loves, and you have them go against Braun, that gives Roman the title and keeps him safe. It makes him look strong. He doesn't look like a chicken, like he's running away from Braun, because Shield's going to go at him head on. They're all three of them just going to fight, fight, fight. And Braun still looks like a monster because it takes three of them to beat him. Nobody's going to team with Braun to help him against the Shield. So there's your feud to keep Roman safe and champion for a while until they figure out if and when they want Strowman to actually hold the title.
Well, let me ask you guys a question. Are the Hounds of Justice a shield from Roman's booze?
I would say yes. I would say that individually, people will, the Roman detractors will boo him. But if he's with the Shield and they're wrestling together as a tag team, they're going to be excited for his segments. Not necessarily because he's there, but because of the other guys that they do like. So I think that he can kind of play as a buffer, as they can play as kind of a buffer and zone, not just between him possibly losing the title on the Braun cash-in, but also to where his segments don't get drowned out with booze, as long as he's got his friends there with him. You know, with a little help from his friends, he might just be able to get over and over some of the fans who have been so against him for so long.
Well, they will help die down the booze, Seth and Dean. If Roman comes out alone, this New York crowd was really interesting. This Brooklyn crowd. They are reminiscent of a Canadian crowd where they get a little wild, they get a little crazy, things kind of go topsy-turvy. I'll be interested to see next week's Raw to see how a normal, quote-unquote, crowd reacts to Roman if he comes out alone, which I believe he will, being the champion. I think he'll kind of not demand his own entrance, but be deserving of his own entrance, and I think that he will get boos. But as his Shield mates join him, those boos will turn into cheers. It won't necessarily get him over. It will protect him. But it also, again, will let the WWE Universe kind of pick all the members of the Shield against Braun. Because in essence, you have, you know, the face team of the Shield versus the face of Braun Strowman. So somebody's got to be the bad guy. So even if they do get booed collectively as a Shield, it works in a WWE's favor because Braun is this huge, lovable monster that people want to see do damage and destruction all the time.
I guess time will tell if that's true, you know? I mean, Roman has been getting some more cheers. Of course, there is the cheer gate that came earlier this year, talking about fans getting paid and placed in locations where they could be heard cheering for Roman.
Wait, I missed a potential payday?
Yeah, I missed out on hearing anybody any of this. This is, I mean, this isn't quite pumping, you know, Goldberg's chance into the arena, so that eventually they would catch on. Like, I mean, it's similar, right? But it's not, I mean, they just put, you know, I mean, that's kind of a standard thing in the entertainment industry, though. Like, you pay, you know, that's what a live studio audience is. They're basically there. You get to watch the show for free as long as you cheer really loud when we tell you to, you know? I mean, it, like at a game show, you really don't, I don't really don't give a crap if that person wins $10,000 on The Price is Right. But if you get up there and you cheer really loud, maybe they'll pull you up on stage and you'll be going for $10,000. You know, like that's, it's a standard thing in the entertainment industry, and it is sports entertainment after all.
I'm upset. I mean, I sit front row at a lot of these shows. They want me to cheer for Roman and want to give me some money. I'll cheer for him. It'll sound like a crowd of 1,000 people cheering for him as loud as I am. Somebody get Vince on the phone. Tell him to cut me a check right now. Roman will be so over, he won't know what to do.
Apparently, a true story. Never been offered any money, but, you know, I mean, it's, yeah, I mean, who wouldn't cheer for somebody for money? I mean, you pay me, there's only about 3 or 4 wrestlers I wouldn't cheer for any amount of money. But for Roman, absolutely. You pay me. Yeah, I will call him the big dog, wear his shirt, you know, the whole 9 yards. All right. So, next, Ronda Rousey defeats Alexa Bliss to become the Raw Women's Champion.
This was yet again a very one-sided short fight. The babyface, you know, Ronda in this instance, taking control and just destroying Alexa Bliss. And the story being, you know, like I mentioned, so this was not the first one on the show. It would not be the last one on the show. Very one-sided face. Dominant victories, you know, making short work of them. And it's like a classic old style of wrestling. You know, the reason that the good guy can't win isn't because he's not the best, isn't because he's not the strongest or the fastest or the most hard. It's because there's adversity that is beyond his control. Okay. And with a lot of heels in professional wrestling, especially somebody like Alexa, she's going to try to run. She's going to try to use. You know, she's going to try to get in your head talking trash. She's got Mickie James coming to help and back her up. And so once you're able to, you know, that's the reason that the babyface keeps losing is because the rules and the odds are stacked against them. But once it gets down to one-on-one, once the babyface is able to take all the heel's advantages away or discover their tricks, it should be one-sided. You know, like a lot of great feuds have been done this way, and that is the feud ender because essentially now there's not a reason. Okay, Alexa, you know, will get a return match possibly, but she doesn't really deserve one. She didn't, you know, in the UFC or in other sports, if you lose a very one-sided fight, you are not necessarily guaranteed an immediate return match because you didn't even prove, you know, what's to say that it's going to be different the second time around so closely. Afterwards, you have to start back and prove and earn a championship opportunity. Show the championship committee that you could possibly, you know, that you could do differently if the situation was different. That you're a better fighter than you were then, that you're more prepared, etc. So, Ronda did what Ronda does, and she dominated and controlled. And she was able to get the victory, and yeah, and it was a big thing. And she had her big heartfelt speech on Monday, you know, thanking and saying everything. And you saw a lot of outpouring on social media from some of the WWE, you know, from some of the WWE women's athletes and stuff, saying that you know it's because, you know, Ronda, even though she was in the UFC at the time, is a big reason that Women's Evolution is happening. The WWE Evolution show is happening because she became popular as a independent star, a single star rather than part of a team, in the UFC, and helped created the women's division there that is still thriving, even though she's not part of it. She has now moved to WWE, but it's because of her and a lot of mainstream media attention that she got that the tides are going to change a little bit to where people were willing to accept women's sports in some capacity, in more of a serious capacity rather than just the sideshow attraction. So we knew as fans once Ronda signed and that she was going to be competing regularly, that she would have the championship. Now the thing is, what is the story that we do now? You know, how long can she continue to run through people? Does she, you know, tear through the roster, or does she, you know, encounter another heel who finds a way to manipulate the rules to where Ronda, you know, and comes up on the losing end? How, you know, where does the story of Ronda go now? Yes, she's claimed the belt, and she's the first woman who, you know, who's, you know, similar to how Brock Lesnar, you know, the first guy to hold, you know, the UFC and WWE championship, heavyweight championships. Ronda's now done the same for the women's side of things. Where does she go from here? Where does the division go from here? It's pretty open-ended. You know, there's no clear-cut challengers that stepped out of the shadows when she had, you know, except Stephanie McMahon, who Ronda beat up and basically said, quit trying to take, you know, this is that we as the women's athletes built this and made all this happen. You're just trying to take credit for it. Where do things go from here? And I think that's the biggest question. I think that's the big excitement that everybody wants to see. She's gotten here. What do they do with it?
I wasn't interested so much in the match because I wasn't expecting a whole lot from it. It was disappointing just because just listening to Ronda, quote unquote, trash talk as she, you know, are you ready? Are you ready? Are you ready? I was like, why does she keep asking Alexa? Is she ready? Just do the damn move already. I'm over this.
She doesn't know how to hide calling her spots. That's what the issue is.
Yeah. It was really bad. It was really bad. And thankfully it did not last a long time, that match. But like you said, the question now is, where do we go from here? I think Monday with her attacking Stephanie, we go to the WWE likes to recreate their best stories, and Boss versus Worker is one of their best stories. Stone Cold versus McMahon. So here we have McMahon versus Rousey again. Stephanie is a former champion in her own right. Yeah, I know it's scary to say, but it's true. But she is, and now Stephanie may not necessarily want to take the title or need the title, but for Ronda to be tied up with Stephanie for a while gives her a high value and a high face opponent to deal with week after week while keeping her safe out of matches with other women who are more skilled wrestlers or sports entertainers than Ronda is at the current moment. It also gives the WWE time to bring up Ronda's compatriots. Shayna Baszler is more wrestler than Ronda. She can come in and those two could, you know, run shots together or rough shot together over the women's division. And Shayna would be the wrestler while Ronda would be the champion, the belt holder, without actually having, again, to do a whole lot of work in the ring. So there are so many possibilities, but it was a foregone conclusion that Rousey was going to win the title. I feel that it's way too early for her, but you know what? I don't make those million-dollar moves like Vince and Drew does, so let them do what they're going to do, and we'll just deal with the fallout.
Thirdly, we get the match we've been waiting for a few years. Miz versus Daniel Bryan. You know what I mean? This match has been years in the making. Since their days as coach and student on the early days of NXT. And Miz gets the W. Questionable matter, some say. But a win is a win nonetheless. Then looks to retire from wrestling Daniel Bryan again. But we now know that that's not the case, as there will be a mixed tag match at Hell in a Cell when Daniel Bryan and Brie Bella go 2-on-2 against The Miz and Maryse. We knew this wasn't going to end. First of all, there were a lot of DQ finishes on this show. But you guys, I mean, how'd you guys like it? This match is the one that got the most time in the whole pay-per-view.
Well, I mean, it did. It was a fantastic, you know, it was a good match, but it also ended in a way that it doesn't end the feud, because we as fans want to see this continue. It's continued for, it's been, you know, they have been at, I mean, what it comes down to now is not the second matchup that I would hope for in this series, but in reality, it is the one they want. It now makes it E! Television Network, Total Bellas versus, you know, the Miz and Mr. and Mrs. show, whatever the hell the name is called. I can never remember it correctly. You know, Miz and Mrs. or whatever. But that's what they want. They want the cross-media promotion and the attention that this will bring, basically having their two reality shows against each other at Hell in a Cell, not in Hell in a Cell. It keeps the thing going, but it's not the way I would have wanted the second match in the series. But you know, Sweep Week is coming up or something like that. So they'll, you know, it's the crossover episode that everybody was hoping for.
Of course, the match ended by quote unquote nefarious means. This is the Miz we're talking about here. The Miz, who is everything the WWE needs him to be. They need him to be a spokesman, an actor, a wrestler. And you have Daniel Bryan, who is everything he wants to be. He wants to be a professional wrestler. He happens to be stuck in a sports entertainment field with his supermodel reality show wife. Of course, it was going to end with brass knuckles to the face. I was surprised that they didn't use the baby carriage as a weapon, like bounce Daniel Bryan's head off of the carriage. I was really thinking that was going to be the deal or something. So was the match or this series going to continue? Yes, because you have The Miz, who is the best heel the WWE has had in the last 10 plus years. And Daniel Bryan, who is one of the most beloved superstars of that probably same amount of time, and their money. They're on reality shows. They're on partner shows. They're both making money for the company. So let them go at it. And of course, you bring their wives into it. Brie and Maryse. The story tells itself. They're both new mothers. They both are married to wrestlers. They both want to protect their family and their family's name, and all the video packages is going to be wonderful for this new, you know, set of matches that we've seen before. Have we seen Maryse versus Brie Bella? Or yes, Daniel Bella, by the way. I like that name. That kind of is fitting now, because this instance of him is indeed not the American Dragon. This is now, he is now a Bella twin husband. He loses his identity. So why not just throw them in a ring together? Whoever wins gets the better red carpet treatment at the next opening for their show premiere. I don't care. I really don't care. It doesn't have to be in a pay-per-view. This could be a SmackDown Live main event. It really has no place on a pay-per-view in my book.
So with that said, and we kind of talked about this a few weeks ago about Daniel Bryan's future. And it seems like, and I know he did an interview saying that everything's looking like he's going to resign. They're allowing him to work the schedule that he wants to work. And of course, I'm sure he's making very good money doing it. The WWE is kind of home for him now. You know, it's always been home for his wife. And they've taken care of them, and there's value in Daniel Bryan in keeping him happy and allow him to work whatever schedule he wants to work. Also, you know, this also with the health concerns, so you don't want to overdo it with the guy. But it looks like he will be staying put,
in WWE, of course, as we see other plans for him in the future, all roads lead to him staying with WWE. I think that that's great. So any other takeaways you guys got from SummerSlam?
I mean, there were okay, so we talked about two of the four short matches. You know, short one-sided babyface. We had, you know, Braun Strowman literally and figuratively running through Kevin Owens, okay? Less than 2 minutes. He one-sided destroyed Kevin Owens. Yet again, it was a thing that, you know, it was clearly one-on-one him with Braun. Braun's able to put him behind him and move on to the next thing. The same thing happened with Finn Balor and Baron Corbin. They've been going back and forth for quite some time. You know, has found a way to come up on top. Balor reaches inside himself, finds what he needs to fight the fight, and that is unleash and bring back the demon. I find it odd that he brought back the demon for Baron Corbin, but that's another matter altogether. But he brings out the demon, crushes Baron in less than 2 minutes. Baron is embarrassed and is making excuses on social media and on Monday about the smoke and the loud music. He didn't even know the match had begun and all this. Basically doing heel stuff, you know, but basically that is now put an end to this feud because the babyface is clearly and definitively defeated the heel. So I found it was good that they brought this back, this kind of method of ending feuds so definitively. But I found it strange that they used so many on one major event. You know, it's something we hadn't seen in WWE in a long time, and they used four of them on one major event. So that to me was noteworthy. The other big noteworthy thing I want to talk about, of course, is the Becky Lynch quote-unquote heel turn. No heel turn about it. I don't think it's going to work as a heel turn because all the fans who stood by and supported Becky understand and stand by and support her and kicking the crap out of Charlotte's ass. This is her best friend who Becky's clawed and fought and scraped to try to make her get her way back into title contention after literally just hanging around and being the cute, fun girl and being Charlotte's friend while Charlotte does all the all the big matches and, you know, just kind of her friend that hangs out with her and they're fighting tag teams. So Becky had her moment. She had her one-on-one match. She fought so hard to just be a lad. And then her friend, you know, with the famous dad, comes in and breezes in and says, hey, you know, give me a chance. I want to be in that match. So now she's, you know, she was one match away from that where Becky had to fight a whole lot longer in order to get in that match. So the fans of Becky, we're frustrated for the exact same reasons. I think it got a lot more cheers than it did boos when she did the same thing the next night on a house show. As far as I understand, it got a lot more cheers than the boos they were hoping for. Becky comes out and, you know, tries to explain everything. But yet again, it's the same thing the fans were thinking when they were kind of after it all happened, you know, Becky. You know, basically, Becky's the hard-fighting kid, the one who, you know, who had to work and claw to get what she wanted and get the opportunities. And here comes, you know, the girl with the rich, famous dad, you know, who just kind of jumps to the front of the line and takes the same opportunities that Becky has, but this friend doesn't appreciate them because she's been handed them her whole life. And you look at realistically their real-life stories and their character stories are pretty much dead on in this whole thing. So I think they're wanting to make it as a heel turn because they don't want to turn Charlotte heel again. It's not going to work. They're not going to get Becky as a heel this way. Because she did it out of in a gray area that everybody can understand. That's the problem. It's not that she, you know, just turned on her for no reason and is being a jerk. Like there's reason and there's justification and people can say, I can see that. I can see, you know, now would that make me hit my best friend in the face? Not necessarily, but I understand. I can sympathize. And you don't want a bad guy that's sympathetic because a sympathetic bad guy is not somebody you want to see lose and get their butt whooped. It's like when they try to make Daniel Bryan go to the Wyatts, and they were going to have Daniel Bryan be healed for a little bit. That's not what the people wanted. He didn't get those kind of reactions. So very quickly, plans were changed, and the Yes Movement began, you know, overtook the world at that point. Hopefully this can do something similar for Becky, that they can finally realize, hey, man, she's somebody who we love her, as opposed to just kind of the top level star sidekick. They're trying to, I've talked for a long time about Becky being one of the last pure faces in WWE with their best to get rid of her, Ethan. So there won't be any pure baby faces left in WWE. They even tried to do something similar with Bayley, like getting pissed off and beating the crap out of her friend Sasha. Like, they don't want baby faces and heels. Everybody has to be shades of gray. But the problem with that is you need clearer cut lines for feuds in order to get the kind of reactions and the moments that you want. That's why the good moments are so few and far between, because everything else is so muddy with gray that there's very few lines that are clear cuts. You know, like Daniel Bryan winning at WrestleMania against, you know, when literally the odds seemed stacked against him. That was because the fans didn't want the one thing to happen. They wanted the other. If everybody was cheering for all three guys, then when one of them wins, you wouldn't have gotten that kind of reaction, that kind of special moment. So that's, you need to see that and realize that. And please don't destroy Becky just because you like Charlotte Flair, because of who her dad is.
I can agree with all of that. My big thing was, you touched upon it before you went on a Becky rant, was Finn Balor whipped out his demon. That was a happy, unexpected surprise. For a long time, Balor has just been kind of there. There was nothing special about Finn, and there was definitely nothing special about Finn going against an Applebee's waiter in Baron Corbin. So to see this match again after we had seen it on Raw time after time, week after week, it was one of those matches where it was like, okay, guys, who really cares? I usually don't do this. I don't take after you guys. I will sit and watch a whole show without taking a bathroom break. I was going to designate that as my potty break. And Demon got whipped out, and I was like, whoa, okay, then I'm going to sit here and watch this loveliness. I also was tweeting at the time, and Twitter exploded. Much like I'm pretty sure a lot of guys and girls, you know, did, because Balor Club is for everyone, but the demon apparently is just so good that people just lose their mind, religion, and everything else. But it was great to see Finn Balor for who we know Finn Balor could be, even though it was, you know, a kind of a run through. It brought again just that glimpse, that hint of who this superstar is, and if the WWE would just let him go, what we would have would be so very, very special. So I enjoyed that brief little giving that we were getting of the demon Balor being unleashed on the world, and all the girls who were happy, and all the boys, because everybody loves the demon.
So that was SummerSlam. Now let's go ahead and move over and talk a little bit of a takeover. I know it's always a favorite time of ours, as we get to watch five matches, give us a lot of great quality. And here we go, the rundown. The Undisputed Era defeated Mustache Mountain to retain the NXT Tag Team Championships. Velveteen Dream defeated EC3 in a singles match. Ricochet defeated Adam Cole to win the NXT North American Championship. Kairi Sane defeated Shayna Baszler to win the NXT Women's Championship. And Tommaso Ciampa defeated Johnny Gargano in a last man standing match to retain the NXT championship.
Of course, every takeover is, it seemingly, better than the last. And this one did not disappoint at all. The Brooklyn crowd was into every match. I was on the edge of my seat for every match. I mean, the Mustache Mountain match, I thought it was going to go the other way, but I think Gargano and Ciampa, once again, we said, what more could they do? Last man standing, absolute lunacy. I mean, just the fact that the length that these guys went through for this match, mind-blowing, you know? I'm at a loss for words because it was just one of those things where I was sitting there going, this is not happening. This is not real. These people are crazy. Everybody got such a treat for this whole takeover. I almost felt bad that they would have to sit through SummerSlam because these five matches I thought would just surpass anything that the big pay-per-view had to offer. And I was almost right. I mean, seriously, I loved every match top to bottom.
The show to me had the highs and lows, and it's not, and TakeOver is becoming more of that because there's several characters that I'm just not, I just don't really care for. And so you had the opening tag match was good. I still just don't get into the Mustache Mountain. I just, they're okay. I don't, you know, they're just not, they just don't really do it for me. And then I think I pretty much just kind of played on my phone during Dream and EC3 because they both wrestled a very slow paced WWE style that just isn't really my thing. I don't really care about either character. It's a feud basically between two heels based on who's more arrogant. So as a fan, neither of them are relatable. They're not characters that I can connect with. So I don't feel, so EC3 is like the big kid who thinks he's better than everybody else. And then Velveteen Dream is just like the weird guy who's more concerned with just showing off and being a spectacle than he is about actually winning matches. So those characters aren't relatable. Their wrestling style isn't that exciting to me. It was pretty much a pass. I mentioned before, I said that's my bathroom break. Ricochet and Adam Cole, I really didn't get into. I just felt it didn't really grasp me just because I don't like Ricochet. I'm not really that big of a fan of him and his work. I like Cole a lot, but Cole's a guy I have to like his opponent. If I don't like who his opponent is, then it becomes a boring one-sided match to me. So that one I didn't really get into as much. I definitely didn't like the title change. I don't understand why. They need to give Ricochet the championship. Kyrie and Shayna put on another heck of a match. Fantastic. If you look at their trio, their series of matches. Shayna, we touched on her, you know, possibly coming up with Ronda, you know, and building to the four versus the four, you know, for SummerSlam or for WrestleMania, possibly. Shayna is so good. She is, you know, but I mean, I saw somebody talk about it on social media. There's still going to be a lot of people who are going to hate on her because she's not feminine and quote unquote pretty enough, you know, but everywhere else that you want in a professional athlete, a superstar, and a character, she excels. You know, she talks the talk. She walks the walk. She goes in there and looks devastating and brutal and dangerous, but she is safe as all get out. I mean, there was the part when she went to do like the step up knee and she like smashed Kyrie right in the face. Like, and she was still okay. Like it was still a safe hit, even though there was some slip up on the maneuver. Shayna is just so good. She is the complete and utter package that you want. She can, you know, she comes into that now and NXT is still awesome, you know, of her as the bully. She pushes everybody around. She intimidates them so that she's already winning step in the ring because they're afraid that she's going to intentionally hurt them, not just try to win the match. Fantastic character. I'm interested to see if they keep her in NXT for longer. Let her rebuild or redevelop that character and then bring her up later. But it was fantastic match. Excellent by both women. You know, if Becky can win the title from Charlotte and Kyrie holds on to the NXT Women's Championship, you know, I think the world might turn out all right after all. You know, if we could have simultaneous moment where both of those women are champions. You know, it's sometimes it just makes you have hope for some women once again. But the main event was fantastic, and you know, it was Ciampa being dark and dastardly, and Johnny basically taking too much and becoming too much of what he hated. He pretty much could have had the match won, but he took the time to try to punish Ciampa, something he wouldn't want to do, something that's out of character for Johnny Gargano. And, you know, he tried to take the last thing and, you know, try to get some kind of retribution and give you the big knee, like you give me the pass, pulls the knee pad down. Yes, he connects with the maneuver, but keeps going and smashes and damages his own knee in the process, and he's unable to answer the 10 count, where Ciampa is able to essentially kind of squirm his way to get his feet to touch the ground from the hanging position. Fantastic, exciting match. Storytelling, it possibly continues the feud, but you can also say Johnny's damaged. Now you can take Johnny off TV a little bit. But coming out of the weekend, you know, we still have the question of who attacked Aleister Black in the parking lot. You know, was it one of the 30 people that we showed on the video? So we have that storyline going forward. But one of the big things I want to know is where the heck was Asuka this whole weekend? What was Asuka doing? She's only the greatest women's wrestler in the history of WWE. You know, having destroyed and defeated anybody and everybody that they put in front of her in amazing fashion, and they just like kept her away for a little bit with no real explanation of where or why. So that kind of hurt me on the inside a lot.
Asuka was on summer school break. She was on vacation. It is the end of summer. She needed to work on her tan and take a few days off. So she'll be back right after spring.
She's gonna be on for like 6 months. She's going back to school. She's gonna get into her degree.
She's working on her degree. That's what it is.
I definitely thought that NXT delivered. Of course, my predictions didn't all come to fruition, but you know, I mean, I liked the story they kept doing with Undisputed Era and Mustache Mountain, and they kind of try to play the towel again, this time for bait. At the end, Undisputed Era did what they had to do to retain the titles. I think, you know, Mustache Mountain, they're going to be more focused, more of a focus on NXT UK. Of course, there's going to be tag team championships there. Not really a need to have to fly them all the time to the US if you have this UK brand that you're going to be building. And I think they'll definitely be a big part of that. Velveteen Dream versus EC3. It didn't matter who was going to win this match. Now, the question is whether or not Velveteen Dream's choice of gear is going to win him points or lose him some. As he had it in the back of his tights and said, "Call me up, Vince." Not sure if that was approved. I don't think that they would have allowed him to do that. I just think he went and did it on his own and didn't. No one really saw it or paid attention to it. I can only imagine that Vinnie Mac is probably not happy about being called out on such a public forum on his network.
Triple H actually commented on that in the post takeover, either the interview thing for Facebook or a press conference. Somebody asked him about what did Vince think, you know, when he heard about that or he saw it, and he made a joke that Vince thought that Velveteen was asking a friend of his to call him on his cell phone, who just happened to be named Vince. So that was the way that they kind of played it off, which, in all honesty, to think about how out of touch Vince McMahon is with what today's kids are doing, to put on your tights, call me up, Vince, he probably thinks that means somebody call him on a cell phone as opposed to the terminology of, you know, call me from NXT up to the main roster.
Yeah, he may not be in touch with what's going on NXT, but you know what? He's got minions. He's got people that pay attention to everything around him and are feeding him all this information. So I bet you somebody found out, told Vince. And you know what? If the Velveteen Dream becomes a little bit of a nightmare,
or future endeavored.
Well, I don't think they're going to go that far. But I think that the kid may learn a lesson. He may need to be taught a lesson.
They had Orlando Jordan, you know. They got rid of him. You know?
Exactly. And they made him into the Velveteen Dream. They can bring back, what's his name? Darren. Darren who was part of Titus, whatever.
Darren Young, and make him
Darren Young.
A Velveteen character. You know, he's already come out as openly gay. Patrick Clark hasn't done that yet.
Exactly. You could just everything could just rotate him out.
Character does is with a followed with a strict and quick no homo, bro.
Yeah, see, that's the problem. See, Vince McMahon, like you said, he may not have understood it, but somebody told Vince exactly what it meant, and that was trouble. Because I know that there is no way on God's green earth that he walked around before the show in those tights and nobody said something. He had probably an alternative pair of trunks on and changed right before he went out. And that means he did it on purpose and he hid it, which is going to cause him grief. Now, whether that grief is future endeavorable or just, you know, here's a shovel, you already dug the hole, bury yourself, is it going to remain to be seen? Hunter might be able to save him a little bit, but depending on the old man's mood, the dream may be over, guys. The dream may be over.
Well, Daniel Danny would be happy about that. Ricochet wins the North American Championship. I mean, Ricochet looked fantastic in this. I mean, Adam Cole's also great in his own, but man, Ricochet showed once again why he's one of the greatest ever. Fantastic. I mean, I'm a huge mark for Ricochet. I don't think that's a secret, so I'm a little biased. But, man, he delivered. Kairi Sane, Shayna Baszler, it's a great story they've been telling. Baszler, it's a powerhouse. She's a killer. She's everything you want out of a heel wrestler. And, you know, Kairi Sane, I think you can do more with her. And the rest of the roster, there's a lot of great opponents she can work with. Where, you know, Shayna Baszler is kind of like Asuka, where it's like she could easily just clean the division. We don't want that to happen, right? So, and plus, Baszler's just getting ready to do things with Ronda, I'm sure, and the Four Horsewomen. She doesn't need a title. She's the enforcer of the Four Horsewomen. And that's great right there. So, Tommaso Ciampa, Gargano, this is the feud that never ends. Is it the end? Well, I don't know. Speaking of ends, we still have Aleister Black, and who the heck hit him? There may be some more information. Apparently, WWE cares more about what happened to, Aleister Black than they do about Hideo Itami. But that's another story for another day.
That's just racism, man. White guy, Japanese guy, okay? Tell me there's not racism in WWE, okay?
With that said, Love Takeover, I give it an A. That's a great if I had to give it one because, you know, I loved it, but it wasn't that, you know, oh my goodness, this is the greatest show I've ever seen. So I'm giving it an A. What grade would you guys give it?
I will go ahead and give this show probably an A-. I liked the show overall. I would have given it an A+, an A++ if it was a little bit longer. I liked EC3 and Velveteen Dream, so that does not take away from this for me at all.
I'm going to have to give it a bit lower just because there were several matches that I just couldn't get into because I don't like the characters. I didn't like the action. So I'll go ahead and give it like just a B, just a solid B. It was a good show because the matches that I did like and I was looking forward to, the tag match, women's title match, the main event were all fantastic, but there was kind of some at least what I would consider some downtime in the center.
All right, well, that's NXT. So let's take a look and see what's going on in the future in WWE for this year. Of course, we have the WWE Super Showdown happening October 6th in Melbourne, Victoria, Australia. And the matches so far announced: Undertaker versus Triple H, John Cena and Bobby Lashley versus Kevin Owens and Elias, Daniel Bryan versus The Miz in a number one contender match for the WWE Championship. And The Shield will be in six-man tag team action against an opponent to be announced. How are you guys liking here? Super Showdown. Of course, it's going to be available on WWE Network.
And the WWE is taking over the world. This is part of that whole worldwide territory conspiracy I told you about once they started going to places like the United Arab, Saudi Arabia, and all this other place, Japan, the UK show. This is another expansion into Vince, literally taking World Wrestling Entertainment and making it a worldwide territory. Bring out your big guns for the shows like this. We didn't see Cena or hear from Cena or think about Cena for the second biggest pay-per-view of the WWE season, SummerSlam, but you bring him out for this overseas excursion, but of course you do. Why? Because how else will you take over a territory without, you cannot do it without bringing out your big guns. And you know, Cena has the biggest guns that are still in the history books and on the payroll currently of the WWE. So it sounds like an awesome card. Every name that they could possibly put on there is there. And I'm pretty sure as they go closer and more into it, they're going to throw some more names out there for us to be, you know, oohing and aahing over.
So is this, do we know if this is another like bot show, like the show in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia was? Is this one that, you know, they're just paying WWE a flat amount to put on a show? Or is this more like the WWE European shows where it's entirely WWE funded and everything?
I believe it is another sold show. It's because they're already telling it's going to be sold out and they're not selling tickets. It's all handled by Australia. So I believe that this is a sold show.
There's absolutely the reason to bring out the big guns and the quote-unquote the big stars like Undertaker and Triple H and John Cena as well. It'll probably be like the greatest Royal Rumble in the history of the Rumble event, you know. It'll be a fun event. But really we're not, you know, it's not going to be anything that's going to have any kind of lasting storyline-wise. I don't expect to see title changes. I don't expect to see any big heel and face turns, those kind of things. But it, you know, it's yet again, WWE continues to expand and put on big events in places they haven't really put on big events before. You know, the Shield against people to be named later, which, you know, may or may not be whomever's injured or maybe some people that are being called up, you know, from NXT that may be on there or people returning from injury. I guess that could be remaining to be seen. Maybe they go against all three members of the New Day. You know, the long-awaited New Day and Shield showdown that everybody's been clamoring for. Who knows? But it'll be, you know, I imagine it'll be a really good show. I'm interested to see how the crowd is, you know, how the crowd reacts, who they favor for, you know, how loud is an Australian crowd. I don't know. I've never seen much that's been filmed down in Australia.
Well, let me tell you, UFC went down to Australia for the first time with Ronda Rousey and sold the place out. So if WWE brings Ronda, they might sell out again.
So they're clamoring for the entertainment, basically, because it doesn't come down there as often, which would make sense. But yeah, so it should be a fun show. You know, available only on the WWE, the award-winning WWE Network for $99, 30-day free trial for first-time users, etc. Is our official plug for the episode.
So looking at now, speaking of Ronda, of course, there's the big women's revolution, and we are not far from Evolution. But before Evolution, you know, where a lot of titles are going to be defended, we're going to get to determine who is going to be wrestling for the NXT UK Women's Championship. As this weekend in NXT UK tapings, 8 women will be participating in a mini tournament to decide who the 2 women that will face off at Evolution will be. And the 8 women are Toni Storm, Ginny, Isla Dawn, Millie McKenzie, Nina Samuels, Dakota Kai, Rhea Ripley, and Zia Brookside. Quite a bunch right there. I mean, 8 great talent. Of course, Nua would be in there if she hadn't gotten injured, I'm sure. Surprised that Killer Kelly wasn't included. What do you guys make of these 8 participants?
I mean, it's a solid 8. You know, I mean, in several of them we have seen on WWE television before. You know, several of them will be making appearances in the Mae Young Classic too, you know, when those episodes air on September 5th. So fans will get a chance to see some of these women a lot. I think it's also a big stand for the showing of faith that they do and that WWE does intend to make this the UK its own independent brand, you know, with multiple championships, you know, so that will give a lot of, you know, I mean, so I guess the next thing after this would be, you know, eventual UK tag team championships, as they continue doing tapings for the WWE UK and, you know, NXT UK, whatever they want to call it. But it's an 8-pack that's stacked, and you know, former Atlanta friend Isla Dawn, we wish her, you know, we'll be rooting for her back here in Georgia to continue to show the world how great she is.
It's a great 8, and the WWE, again, like you said, they've got these ladies, a lot of them in the Mae Young Classic too. A lot of these ladies are world-renowned outside of the WWE. They have strong followings. They are great competitors, so it'll be interesting to see. I am rooting, of course, for Isla Dawn. She is my dark horse favorite in this one. But the poster itself, Toni Storm is a phenom. She is one of the women who WWE clamor to get in their ranks, and I'd be hard pressed to see her not win this one. So as good as Toni is, as good as Isla is, all of the ladies who are named for this tournament are great in their own right. But I believe Toni is that standout superstar that they would definitely want to coin the first champion of the WWE UK brand.
She's definitely the one to beat, many will say, but I definitely like the selection. A lot of great talent. So I can't wait for this tournament. And look, we've been able to stay spoiler-free on a lot as far as NXT tapings and the Mae Young Classic 2, and hopefully this as well. But fantastic choice. I'm happy with it. I can't wait to watch it on the WWE Network. Available to new subscribers for only $9.99. For free to new subscribers. Everyone else, $9.99. All right. So that brings us to Evolution. It's going to be held October 28th in New York. The Raw Women's Championship will be defended. SmackDown Women's Championship will be defended. NXT Women's Championship will be defended. the UK Women's Champion will be declared, as well as the winner of the 2018 Mae Young Classic. And also announced this past week that the goddess of the WWE, Alexa Bliss, will be going one-on-one against Trish Stratus. If I have one prediction to make, it's Alexa is going to knock Trish out of her stratosphere.
Did you fall down and hit your head or something? You realize Trish is the diva of the century, not just the decade which she was crowned, but Trish Stratus is everything that the WWE wanted their women's division to be. Then, now, and forever. She's athletic. She's beautiful. She's a mother now. She's going to be forever hot and bountiful and plentiful and every man's fantasy, every girl's reality wannabe or whatever. Alexa's good. Alexa's great. But Alexa is Trish version 3.0. So now the original will come back and she'll pat the little one on her head and she'll send her back to school and show her how it's really supposed to be done.
What a big opportunity for somebody who just lost a match at the second biggest show of the year. Coincidentally, you know, so it shows that opportunities and things don't necessarily arise purely by wins and losses in the sports entertainment world. You know, the dream match, the main event features somebody who just lost the championship. You know, it's a little unusual, but you know, it's quote unquote, it's a dream match. I don't think there've been a whole lot of people sitting around clamoring for Alexa Bliss versus Trish Stratus. I personally would want to see, although I know it won't happen because, she's afraid, but Lita versus Kairi Sane. Only for the fact that Lita said in that table episode that Kairi Sane's sliding D in the corner in the Women's Royal Rumble was the hardest she's ever been hit in her entire life. So, you know, I don't think we might see Lita compete in that event. She'll probably be there, you know, calling the action maybe, or she might have a match of some kind or a multi-woman. But interesting to see. If this is the main event, then we have championships defended. Will the championships be defended against top contenders? Or will the championships be defended against dream match opponents of days past, similar to Trish Stratus? Like, does Lita somehow get a match against Charlotte? You know, for you know, the SmackDown Women's Championship, if she's still the champion come the end of October. You know, does Ivory come back? You know, and get a championship match? Because she's a former, you know, multi-time women's champion and is on Netflix, you know, is a character on Netflix Glow, you know, and helps that. So we get some more cross-media attention because she was, you know, she was an original Glow girl and a former women's champion and she's helping with the show and she's still, you know, is still in amazing shape and could possibly, you know, put on an okay match with somebody. I'm more interested to see as things continue to announce. Now, I don't know if Trish can, like, I had this conversation with somebody else about, you know, they said, oh, I'm, you know, I'm pretty sure Trish can still go. And I got to thinking, like, when Trish wrestled, being able to go meant a whole different thing, okay? Essentially, the standards for the division were a lot lower. So even if Trish is in her prime, is she still at the capability of people, you know, now one and two generations past when she was in the WWE, you know, because these are girls who saw what she became in such a short time and they started training to wrestle when they were 12 and 13, as opposed to waiting until they were already there and working their way up, you know, at Alexa Bliss at her young age, you know. Is she a better in-ring competitor than Trish was at her height? You know, like that's because the bar is set differently now. You know, to go meant different things back then than it does now. And so that's the biggest thing. Like, I have no doubt that the match will be good. It'll be fun. It'll be entertaining, you know. But I don't expect it to be, you know, the Mets or seven-star winning classic type match. It's going to be fun. It'll be entertaining. Everybody will enjoy it. You know, you'll get to see what you want. Everybody will get their shit in, that kind of thing. But I don't expect it to be like a classic you're going to watch again and again and again over time.
Yeah, well, that's definitely a first for WWE, having an all-women's show. Not a first in pro wrestling, but a first in WWE. So great for them. I look forward to see what else they do. Another question is, will AJ Lee be there? They reached out to her before they did the poll on WWE.com. You know, she blew away the competition on that poll, but getting the most votes from fans as somebody they like to see return. They reached out to her again since then. You know, we know the WWE relationship with one CM Punk, AJ Lee's husband. Will she put aside that personal animosity and do business? Obviously, it's what the fans want. But, of course, she's very happy being retired and doing her own thing. She's got her book out, other opportunities. But the chance to be a part of this, I mean, it's big. I would love to see AJ Lee be a part of Evolution. I know everybody would be. You know, WWE.com, that poll was not manufactured. So if it was, she would not have won. So that shows right there that people still want to see AJ Lee, you know, and I would love to as well. All right, so to close out the show, let's talk about the 20th annual G1 Climax. It is over. It has ended. And in your finals, two-time winner Hiroshi Tanahashi defeated Kota Ibushi to win his third G1. Of course, Kota Ibushi had Kenny Omega by his side. Tanahashi had a Shibata on his corner. You know, I think that, you know, emotional right there. See Shibata back, you know, while not competing, still somewhat involved out in the public eye is great. But here you go. The 7-time IWGP Heavyweight Champion wins the G1 and will face, you know, unless something else happens, has earned a right to face Kenny Omega for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship at Wrestle Kingdom 14 on January 4th.
Hiroshi Tanahashi is the once in a century talent. I mean, although he may not connect as well with the American fans as some of the other New Japan talent does. You listen to the reactions you get. You look at the faces of the fans and the crowd when he's out there. That shows you why he's the one in a 100, you know, why he's the one once a century talent. It's not just because of his outstanding ring talent that he can put on such great matches with people. It's the emotional connection, the way that how much he means to New Japan Pro Wrestling and their fans. That's the biggest thing. He's, you know, you think of John Cena and what he does for, you know, for children's charities and for Make-A-Wish and all those kind of things, like that people have such a connection to Cena, you know, or so many different other, performers and athletes or whomever, but there is that emotional connection with Tanahashi that the Japanese crowds have, and that is why he's so special. And so he perseveres and he does what he does and bests, you know, Kota Ibushi in an outstanding finals. I mean, Tanahashi's going to Wrestle Kingdom to face for the championship once again. It was great to see Shibata there. Yet again, we don't know if and when he may return to the ring, but just to see him there was emotional for all involved as well. Just an amazing match, an amazing win, just an amazing moment with Tanahashi receiving the you know, the Vic having Shibata in his corner, just very, 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 very special event and special match.
I think emotion is the big word of it. We expect a lot of action. We expect a lot of great wrestling, hard hitting, and just, you know, just in a great, great contest. But this brought a whole lot of emotion, which I think was American in a way, but also very Japanese in a way. So while it was, you know, a great match all around, it was just the underlying emotions there that just really brought me into this more than anything else that was happening.
It was a great match, a great way to end. Of course, Kenny Omega and Okada were there till almost the end. But, you know, Tanahashi, Kota, Ibushi wasn't exactly the finals I predicted. But, man, there's a reason why they called Tanahashi the Ace. You know, is he one of the greatest Japanese wrestlers of all time? That's definitely, he's definitely in the conversation. Is he one of the greatest wrestlers in the world? I mean, if there's anyone that doubted him, he may be proving them wrong. You know, he could be on his way to winning his 8th IWGP Heavyweight Championship in January. And, you know, he's a man who will defend that opportunity if put in on the line. You know, that title shot. It'll be fun to see what the future holds between now and then. See if he will remain the challenger. And to see if Omega will remain the champion. A great match to look forward to, though. So, yeah. Tanahashi wins the 28th G1 Climax. Now his third time winning it. Fantastic. Great choice. I liked it. Everything was great. That match was awesome. Everybody should check it out. New Japan World. That's also available for subscribers to pay 9.99 yen. Whatever is in your country. So with that, that is another episode, you know, on the books. I hope you enjoyed it. Please go on FOW Radio and subscribe on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, Podbean, Google Play. Give us a rating. We want to hear your feedback on the show. We definitely appreciate that. Check us out on the Twitter machine at FOW Radio. Danny's on Twitter at Danny F in Danger. Mika's on Twitter at Mika Villas. I'm on Twitter at YellowmanPA. And until next time, keep watching wrestling.